This show is part of the Out of This World Entertainment on the Sci-Fi Podcast Network, TSFPN.com.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast for TheForce.net. My name's Eric, and I'm your host, bringing you the latest news and commentary from the Star Wars community. I've already posted a review of Episode 3 back in May, so I'll put up a link in the show notes for those of you who want to listen to it again as part of this series. In today's show, I'll be reviewing Episode 4, A New Hope. But first, here's a quick update from Jay.
Welcome to the Expanded Universe Minute. I'm your host, Jovial Jay, from Jedi Journals at RebelScum.com. Scheduled to ship this week from Dark Horse is Empire No. 33. In this issue, on the planet Jabim, Luke Skywalker's situation has gone from bad to worse. Having managed to escape from a group of rebels wanting revenge for his father's actions during the Clone Wars, Luke ends up the captive of a group of wealthy Jabimi. They've made a deal with the Empire. In exchange for their own freedom, they're going to give the rest of the planet's population to the Empire as slaves. Luke's only hope lies with Leia and the droids, but they, of course, have problems of their own. And coming this week from Scholastic is The Last of the Jedi No. 2, Dark Warning, by Jude Watson. As the second book of the series begins, a fugitive Obi-Wan Kenobi, accompanied by a fellow escapee, must avoid bounty hunters, including the remorseless up-and-comer Boba Fett. Tune in each week to get the lowdown on new items being published in the galaxy far, far away. This has been the Expanded Universe Minute. Jovial J, signing out.
Let me start this review by saying that after doing a lot of thinking about it, I decided not to talk about how the original Star Wars film affected the motion picture industry, nor about its cultural effects. Those topics are certainly interesting to delve into, and I will get to them later on, but I'm going to try to keep this series consistent. For this episode, I'm merely reviewing the movie, primarily as it stands on its own, and to a lesser extent, how it fits into the classic trilogy and the overall Star Wars saga. Also, this review will be based on the most recent DVD release of the film. Whether I like it or not, this is the version that George considers the final version. we're going to believe that. Anyway, this is supposed to be the definitive version of the film, so this is what I'm reviewing. And finally, don't look for anything new here. Sure, I normally try to point out some new way of looking at something in most of my commentary, but this movie has been around for almost 30 years now. Most of you have seen this movie a billion times. Most of you know more about this movie than the cast and crew do. All I'm saying is, don't expect anything profound here. This is just my take on the movie based on what I remember as a kid and what it's like watching it now. Okay, enough disclaimers, on with the review. Now, you know what? I'm going to do something a little different for this one. I'm going to talk about the review, and then I'm going to review it. When it comes to reviewing this movie, it almost gets in the way of itself. I was born in 1974. I didn't see Star Wars when it came out in 1977. I think I saw it when it was re-released just before Empire Strikes Back came out. I was old enough that I remember some of the film, but young enough that I remember very, very little. I remember Darth Vader boarding the Tan of Four. I remember Darth Vader killing Obi-Wan. I remember Luke and Leia swinging across a chasm in the Death Star. I remember the X-Wings and TIE Fighters and the Death Star blowing up. And interestingly enough, I think my most vivid memory is probably of the trash compactor scene. Now, as a kid, I had some kind of a book with a cassette tape where it was kind of like an audio book that guides you through a picture book of some sort. I must have listened to that thing constantly because even though I don't remember seeing it more than once in the theaters as a child, I had that movie memorized inside and out. Or so I thought. It wasn't until, it must have been my freshman year of high school, that I rented the movie again. And even on a TV screen, watching the Star Destroyer overtake the Tan of Four was still impressive. And the movie rolled on, and everything seemed just as I remembered it. Then, all of a sudden, there's a scene with Vader in some conference room with a bunch of military officers. And they're talking about the Imperial Senate and how it's been dissolved by the Emperor. Huh? What Imperial Senate? What Emperor? Then some guy starts talking back at Vader, and Vader starts choking him. And then another guy has the audacity to order Vader to stop. I mean, was this guy not paying attention? Vader's choking the last person to talk back to him. And yet Vader obeys. There was way more going on in that scene than I'd ever picked up on before as a little kid. And it was at that point that I really started paying attention to the story of the film, rather than just all the cool aliens and spaceships and lightsabers. And that's part of what makes reviewing this movie so difficult. There's a part of me that wants to review it as I initially saw it back when I was about 5 years old. Of course, all I really got out of it back then was a handful of scenes and some general memories of the droids and Chewbacca and Luke Skywalker. Then there's a part of me that wants to review it as I see it now, but that could be just as incomplete. After all, I grew up with this movie. And for that time period, that was a big deal. These days, there's the internet, there are console video game systems. Blockbuster movies aren't annual, they're seasonal. Computer graphics are all over the place. It's a very different world now. Back then, there was Star Wars, and that was about it. And as for entertainment for a kid, there was sports and toys. And for toys, there was G.I. Joe, Transformers, and Star Wars. It's not so much that kids of my generation grew up with this. It's that growing up with something back then was different than it is now. Yeah, I know. I had to walk to school barefoot, in the snow, uphill both ways. I'll stop sounding like somebody's grandfather now. But my point is, it's easy to love Star Wars when you grow up with it as a kid, and when it's one of only a few fantasy-like creative outlets you had. Can I give this a fair review? Can I look at this objectively? Can I point out the good points, knowing that they're actually good and not just some nostalgic thing? And can I point out the bad points, knowing they're actually bad and I'm not just doing it to sound objective? It's easy to find something likable as a kid. As adults, we're much more critical. Many of us rip on Phantom Menace, but a lot of kids love it. Yes, even Jar Jar. And yeah, as a kid, I liked the Ewoks too, and now I find them mostly annoying. Well, no, I guess I find them tolerable. But see, that's the thing. If I were seeing Return of the Jedi for the first time as an adult, I'd probably hate the Ewoks. But I grew up with them. So even at the worst of times, they're tolerable. So I'm going to try to tackle this review as objectively as possible from an adult's point of view, from today's time period, with allowances for the fact that it's almost 30 years old, and with comments on the special edition changes as if I didn't have any sentimental attachment to the original versions. So here we go with the review for the original Star Wars movie, also known as A New Hope. This movie has the best opening of any film I've ever seen. Any film. There are two parts to this. First, the opening audio cue really knocks you out of your seat. The first 30 seconds of music are among the most impressive I've ever heard in a film, and do the most toward expressing a sense of something very powerful and epic going on, even before you know what that thing may be. The second part of the opening, of course, is the Tana IV being chased by the Star Destroyer. Even if you know nothing about Star Wars, the overwhelming sense of the smaller ship's helplessness really hits you. To this day, I can't think of a single opening shot of a movie that comes close. And for those of you out there who like to send us emails, I challenge you to find something that comes close. Right out of the gate, we've got stuff happening. And I don't mean just action scenes, but plot development. Sure, the opening crawl gives us only a slight clue as to what's going on, and sure, we're still in the dark on most of the backstory. But even despite the fact that there's no dialogue for the first 5 minutes of the film, we know that this bad guy, Darth Vader, has boarded a peaceful ship and killed most of the crew while searching for the plans for something called a Death Star, which obviously can't be a good thing. Meanwhile, a girl put some type of a CD-ROM into a robot, probably containing the plans for that Death Star thing, and these two helpless robots manage to escape the ship. All this, and we're only 7 minutes into the film at this point. And rather than using exposition, Lucas uses the very important show-don't-tell technique that he seemed to later lose sight of when doing the prequels. One of the most amazing things about this film is how the two characters we can most easily relate to are robots. One of them can only emote through his posture, and the other can't emote at all, other than by turning his head back and forth. And only one of them can even speak. Yet, in many ways, these two characters carry much of the film on their shoulders, especially in the first two acts. It's hard to believe that the same George Lucas who wrote the dialogue for the prequel trilogy managed to pull off such a nearly impossible task as bringing these two droids to life. To be fair, Anthony Daniels and Kenny Baker deserve much of the credit, especially Daniels. Though the relationship wasn't nearly as strong in the prequel trilogy, 3PO and R2-D2 brought a lot to the classic trilogy, especially in this first film. So the droids end up on this desert planet, and now they're captured too. And all of this is within the first 15 minutes of the film. Between the events in space and the interesting nature of the droid characters, the movie manages to draw us in such a way that takes most films two or three times as long. And it's a good thing, too, since now we're in for quite a long trek through the Tatooine scenes. That being said, while Lucas does seem to get better with the general pacing as the years have gone by, sometimes his story needs to develop. The strong opening, plus the gradual release of information about what's really going on, makes the slow part of the movie pretty easy to get through. And another thing that helps make this film easy to get through is John Williams' score. Of course, these were strong throughout all of the movies, but I think it was strongest in this film. This is one of those films where the soundtrack almost counts as its own character. Alec Guinness is perfect for the role of Obi-Wan, and while it could be said that Mark Hamill is also perfect for Luke, here's a good example of something people complained about a lot in the prequel trilogy, but far fewer people complained about here. Sure, Anakin came across as fairly whiny in Episode 2, but whinier than Luke? Hardly. Hamill's performance is exaggerated and a bit over the top most of the time, something people often associate with stage acting, and Luke comes across as painfully whiny. Fortunately, like with Anakin in the prequels, it works in the context of the story. Finishing up the first act, we get to see Mos Eisley, which is a great showcase for Lucas's creativity. The aliens looked great. However, the extras they threw in with the special edition were often distracting. Some of the things worked really well, most of the stuff in the background. And typically, anything added in the foreground was distracting and annoying. In general, I'm glad Lucas expanded Mos Eisley a little bit more, though, making it look more like a real spaceport that had more than just one or two buildings. Han Solo is easily my favorite character from the classic trilogy, so it pains me to say this, but Harrison Ford's acting in the cantina was a little rough. And as much as I'm going to try to avoid the whole who shot first argument here, I'm curious as to how a Rodian, a race known for being bounty hunters, manages to miss what's essentially a point-blank shot. The DVD version of the Jabba scene worked okay. The biggest problem I had with it was the rather gratuitous shot of Boba Fett. Fortunately, most of the bad dialogue we've had in the movie so far gets a tad bit stronger in the second act. We get a better explanation of the Force, and the weak Luke, Han, and Leia we had earlier transitions into a stronger, well, Han and Leia. Luke's still a bit whiny. But especially after Leia's rescue, the banter between her and Han is great. The conflict of the movie really starts to ramp up once the group hits the Death Star, and the stakes get a lot higher. The heroes are thrust into situations that seem more and more impossible, and yet they manage to work their way through it without the technobabble we've become so accustomed to in recent years. The end of Act 2 is stronger than the finale in a lot of other films I've seen. The only serious issue I had with Act 2 was the lightsaber battle. Even before the incredible choreography of Episode 1, this fight seemed a little bit weak. Still, it's forgivable, and this isn't supposed to be a martial arts movie. The final act of the movie, the famous Battle of Yavin, was easily one of the most memorable pieces of the entire saga. Again, the dialogue falls flat, but this is the type of environment in which George Lucas really shines. The pacing and the editing on the attack of the Death Star made this one of the best action sequences of the entire series, and this is one place in which the special edition footage really improved the scenes. There are a lot of other things I could discuss here, such as the use of black and white by the Imperials and the more earthy tones of the Rebels, or the clean, pristine look of the Imperials versus the ragged look of the Rebels, or the different references to mythology or the various Kurosawa films. But again, this is just a review. I'm not trying to analyze the movie as much as I'm merely reviewing it. This was the only Star Wars film written to stand on its own, and it shows. This movie had some flaws, many of which are the same things that people complained about with the prequels, but especially when compared to the prequels, this movie's strength was in its story. A very epic yet very simple story about good triumphing over evil. Those of you who have seen the parody Thumb Wars may remember Princess Bunhead's little speech the first time she met Dark Helmet Man. Bad is bad, good is good. As surprising as it may be, I think that that may be part of the key to the film's success. It wasn't overly complicated with psychological conflicts and morality plays. What was bad, and what was good. Overall, it's not surprising that this film spawned a franchise. It's hard for me to place this movie behind Empire Strikes Back, but this is my second favorite movie in the series. There's so much that works in this movie, the flaws are easy to overlook. And that essentially wraps up my review. Sure, I could have delved more deeply into the film, and that's fun to do sometimes, but I don't think this movie is supposed to be something at which you have to try that hard. It's meant to be simple in nature, broad in scope, and quite simply, fun. I hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. I want to encourage you guys to email us anytime you have questions, comments, or feedback. Our email address is podcast@theforce.net. And if you like today's show, you can help us out a lot by voting for us at podcastalley.com. As always, the opinions expressed here belong to myself, and they don't necessarily reflect the opinions of other TFN staff members, nor of Lucasfilm. TheForce.net is not affiliated with Lucasfilm in any way. This podcast is copyright 2005 TheForce.net, except the review itself, which is copyright 2005 Eric Blythe, and appears both here and at MovieSurvivalGuide.com. Until next time, take care, and may the Force be with you.